Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday, and this is Browner and Lawhead. That's right, John Browner, Jason Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN, coming to you from Southern California. So many things, so little time. Our 1 hour a day is your favorite 1 hour a day of sports and entertainment, mostly entertainment, more than sports. Jason, what's up, brother?
What up, dog? It's Championship Monday, just minutes away from tip-off here. And, what a great Saturday night. Well, at least in the latter game. Everything, everybody wanted out of a Duke-Carolina first time ever matchup in the tournament, let alone in the Final Four. So it delivered, man. I really enjoyed watching that game. I was pulling for Duke a little bit under the circumstances, but I gotta tell you, man, I'm excited about this national title matchup with the way Carolina is playing. And as I said, we talked about it after that first weekend. I said, man, Carolina just went from like an 8 seed to a 1 seed in like, in a minute. And so this feels like 2 ones, obviously, because they're both blue blood programs, but the way Carolina has ended the season and then the force they played with coming through the tournament, they just feel like a 1 seed, and this would be the highest seed ever to win a national championship if they were to pull it off.
We've got that. We've got much more to come on the national title conversation. We've also got the Padres made a trade for some guy named Sean Manea. I know I'm pronouncing that last name horribly wrong, but I got some comparisons that may give you some comfort on more information about this guy. And Magic Johnson, my favorite Laker of all time, literally just keeps giving and dishing on the Lakers and their current state of their front office, and we'll definitely get to that on the show. But first, if you missed anything on the podcast, or if you're new to the podcast, all you have to do is head over to iTunes or YouTube. Kaplan and Crew, Brown and Lawhead. We are in the umbrella of Kaplan and Crew, the Great Friends Sports Network, because we're the number one show in the Great Friends Sports Network. And we're also your favorite podcast that you didn't know was a podcast / radio show / YouTube show / conversationalist topic specialist. I don't know where to start with this national championship game because I got this thing entirely wrong from the very beginning.
We all did.
I will not sit here. And I told people before this started I was going to get this wrong. I'm not an expert at this. This was probably the hardest year ever to read this tournament due to COVID. You had guys with 6 years of experience playing against 18-year-old basketball players. So the two teams that are left are the two highest caliber upperclassmen with the talent level, and they won out. So to revisit the Duke-North Carolina game, going into that game, the one thing I hope we did not see was a game plagued by fouls. It wasn't.
Yeah.
A game had a cloud over it through some form of error on the court. It did not. This was, as Jason alluded to, the perfect way a rivalry game between teams of this nature could have had on such a large stage in such a big moment. Because I felt like every single one of those kids met the moment. Now, this idea about the Duke players not shaking hands with the North Carolina players after the game, I don't got no problem with that. The kids just lost to a team that was probably just jaw-jacking them.
And the other thing about that is it's unfair to get examined that like that, because when you watch, go back and watch, right? In that close of a game, it wasn't some walk-away game where you knew they were pulling guys out at the end and, there was a bunch of pomp. This thing was ended at kind of the buzzer. Even though it was a four-point game, it went down to the wire. When you watch North Carolina's team, they run off into the corner. They celebrate together, which is fine. It's an intense game at that level, at that moment, at that type of ending. They're all in a circle. They're all running to the corner. They're all together jumping on each other like they won the World Series. And for a team to just be like, hey, look, I can't wait for that. my heart has been ripped out of my chest. I can't wait for them to, jump around and celebrate. And so for some of those kids to walk off, that's not what it was about. It was just one of those things that it's just like, they're going to take their time to celebrate and go crazy in the corner. And, I think there was too much read into that. Coach K walked over, shook every kid's hand, congratulated them, as you're seeing right there. So, you know, it was one of those things. Had the game like been in hand with 3 minutes to go and starters were being pulled out to hear the crowd and then the horn just ended, if they would have walked off in that kind of a manner, then you could kind of get on them. But I just don't see, you know, that's just, you know, cherry picking any little story you can. I mean, you know.
I think for more reasons than one, this goes back to something that I hope people understand. These are children. Like, yeah. The Duke players, not the North Carolina players. The Duke players. Those are children. Those kids you're seeing on the screen, with their, not the ones with the jerseys on who've been clapping all night. The kids who have sweat on their uniforms. They're not old enough to drink. Okay? They probably do. One almost had a DUI, so. But they're not old enough to drink. Period. These are children. And in one of the hardest moments of their life, they've now been embarrassed twice by the same team. It just doesn't go down well. I don't care who you are. They're 40-year-old politicians who can't shake hands with the guy on the other side of the
aisle. Exactly right. Exactly right. And you know what? These kids have been through so much this year with the Coach K and all of that distraction. I mean, they've had let me tell you something. Nobody's had a longer year of college basketball than this Duke team with everything from the start. You know, there's obviously a documentary following this team around as the year's gone on. The whole lead up to Coach K's, you know, last game at Cameron. Then when will his last game? These kids had to play every night like it was going to be his last game maybe. And they got to this point. They played a great basketball game. They put themselves in position to win against a tough opponent who's playing great basketball.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't, you know, that's almost like that horse does not deserve to get beat, in my opinion.
Duke's North Carolina's best player had been in college basketball for roughly 4 years already. So what he knows just generally about the sport of college basketball, which is different than high school basketball and it's different than NBA basketball. College basketball is a life of its own. It's refereed different. It's played different. And so you have to learn the ins and outs of the game. And North Carolina did that. They know that. And these guys are highly talented guys. Duke has a bunch of young guys who can just play, and they don't have time to figure it out because the talent is taking them to the next level. So the people who are criticizing these kids for walking off the court, okay, if that's the guy you want to be, if that's the adult you want to be, cool, chastise the kids for walking off the court. Good for you. But again, I thought that these kids played themselves into a position where they can walk off the court with their heads held high. They got beat by a better team on two occasions because North Carolina is just a better matchup, is a bad matchup for this current Duke team. And that's it. That's the end of the story. And and tonight, in a couple of minutes, we're about to see if North Carolina didn't shoot their load against Duke. Because I don't know if you've ever been in any high-tense situations. The next situation ain't going to be the same.
Right.
It's just not. Nothing can match what they just did. So the question is now, can Hubert Davis, who, again, I didn't think he deserved this job when he got it. I'm not going to sit here and pretend. He said some things at this press conference that I just scratched my head about, wondering what the hell is this guy talking about. But he got the team to this point. He got them to fight off one of the largest comebacks we've ever seen by Baylor. Coached him to a win against in one of the most tense, pressurized situations a coach will ever be in, going up against an icon in his last game, expecting for them to beat you. They win that game. So if anybody can get their team back up one more time for this, it's this guy. Mm-hmm. It's this guy. He's got his finger on this team's pulse. Kansas, I don't know, man. I don't like him. Didn't like him in the beginning. Didn't like him against Villanova, but I feel like they will win because Villanova has so many injuries. I don't like them tonight. I don't like them in a couple of minutes. If they win in that halftime, won't like them after halftime either. I don't know. I just don't see it.
Well, you know, the experts, whoever, they love them tonight. And there's a couple of reasons why I think they have the advantage at least. And this is not to say that they're the better team. I just think that the advantage is that they had an easier game on, like you said, they had an easier game on Saturday night, right? There's that easier. You're coming off of not such a high win. You're coming off of a business-like type of win, when now you can set yourself up and get into that business type. Whereas Carolina came off that huge emotional win. No win, probably more emotional for Carolina
and satisfying.
It's on the short list of their Mount Rushmore of wins in school history. So you have that, and you have Carolina, obviously, with Hubert Davis, who's done a great job. But if there's anything that, you know, Hubert Davis at least had in his hip pocket against Duke, was the familiarity of Duke. Yes. Knowing Duke, knowing the program, knowing the opponent, being an in-conference opponent, even though he's just there, you know, he's been on the bench with Roy Williams, so he knows that opponent, where he doesn't know Kansas like he knows Duke. And so, when you look at the X's and O's of that type of thing, and you start checking, you know, remember we did the list, your little list,
List
for the NFL, you'd have to say, look, Bill Self is going to have the advantage in this game with this team against this opponent, because of just knowing the moment, being there a million times, you know, just having that comfort and being able to put his team at ease. I think his team feels good about this matchup going in. And so, here in a little bit, we'll see. I think if Carolina can play the type of basketball that they've played, then yeah, I think Carolina has the advantage. But it's those other things. Can they play through those other things, which is, you know, the hangover of such a great win and an emotional win? Can they play through not knowing their opponent like they knew Duke? Can they play through a little bit more inexperience as a coach of Hubert Davis against Bill Self? Although Hubert Davis, you know, say what you want, that guy had all three of his timeouts left down the stretch. Coach K took a weird timeout when he hit that three. He hits that three with a minute 18, I think, to go up one, and he calls a timeout right on it. He burns his last one. And so, in my opinion, I'm going, Coach K, what are you doing? Like, you've only got your one timeout left. Carolina's got three. Make Hubert call that timeout. Right. You hit the three to go up one. There's still three shot clock intervals to go through. You're going to allow Carolina, who you now just hit with a punch to go up one, to relax, go in the huddle, draw some stuff up, talk about the next minute and a half without burning a timeout. And now he's got three, you've got none, and you needed one after you hit that layup to cut it to two instead of taking that three later on.
There were two pivotal moments in this game. This is one that you're talking about, because I thought that was a good timeout, regardless of how many you had left. Here's why. He knew his players. He knew his young guys. He knew that I got to get this timeout to get them, or regardless of what happens, I need to get this timeout to get them organized. See, I didn't think that timeout was about North Carolina. I thought that timeout was about Duke. And I thought it was taken at an appropriate time.
It probably was. But I still think, you know, one thing my dad always preached, and I'm not saying my dad is a better coach than Coach K, but one thing my dad always preached was, you got to have a timeout in a close game down the stretch. You got to have one. Your kids need one. So, yeah, it probably was more about his guys than Carolina. But what I'm also under the impression to say, hey, you know what? I'm also going to trust my guys after this three to be up. And now the pressure's on Carolina to get a bucket. All we need to do is get a stop. And if we get this stop here, or I'm forcing Carolina to take this timeout, I'm at least going to wait. You know, I know the only way he gets that timeout is if he gets it on the make, right, before Carolina. The defense can't call timeout. But in my look, 43 seconds, maybe a different story. 29 seconds, obviously a different story, because you're inside of any shot clocks. But man, I think a minute 18, three shot clock intervals at least. I just thought that was
The second pivotal part of that game is that kid missing both those free throws.
Oh, that was huge. Now, well, they went 12 for 20 for the game. So you can blame that kid because he missed the two down the stretch. But at the end of the day, they went 12 for 20.
Now, this is where you and I are going to have a massive split, because any person that tells me that those two free throws didn't lose the game, or the kicker missing this kick at the end of the game didn't lose the game, Oh, I disagree with that. That flies in the face of everything we believe about sports. You get to these pivotal moments so people can succeed or fail. Because if you succeed in these situations, oftentimes you win the game. When a guy makes a game-winning shot, they don't go, yeah, that shot didn't win the game. Well, the hell it did. It's called the game-winning shot. Like, if those would have been the last two free throws, they would have said this kid made the game-winning free throws. So, again, I'm not here to chastise the kid. I just think that the idea that people say, oh, this didn't lose the game. Well, hell, if it happened at the end and you didn't win because of it, that did lose you the game. Because all the hard work that got you to that point is what got you to that point to be in the position to win the game. I've never subscribed to the idea that the game is lost in the first quarter, because it's not. Any mistake can be overcame at any point in the game until you reach the point in the game where the mistake cannot be overcame, and that being those two free throws.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to disagree with that kind of evaluation. There's no doubt. I mean, those two free throws were the backbreaker. If it didn't lose the game, at least it avoided them from going into overtime at worst. There's no doubt that they could have got that game into overtime. But as you said early on in the broadcast, Carolina's just a better team.
Yes.
And if the game gets stretched into overtime, Carolina's going to win that game.
They won that game too.
Yeah.
It's okay.
They have the better individual player. Caleb Love was the best player in the building.
Yes.
And he did what the best player in the building is supposed to do in those moments, and that was put his team on his back a little bit, and they jumped on. Not only did when he started putting them on their back, other guys followed suit. Manic finally woke up. The big hillbilly, my hillbilly Walton is what I call him. Hillbilly Walton, or I was even saying during the game, I was tweeting. I go, the guy, he looks like the Unabomber, which is actually an amazing nickname for him because of his range. They should have called him the Unabomber. And then he came up with that huge block shot down the stretch. Manic had that huge block shot. And I think Williams, actually, the kid that missed the free throws, I think he blocked Williams inside in the interior, and that turned the tide as well. So they were just the better team, and they were all year, and it just manifested as the season culminated down the stretch. They were clicking on all cylinders. Not to say Duke wasn't playing good basketball.
To get to that point, you had to be playing good basketball. So they were playing good basketball, but they got outplayed.
They did.
They got outplayed, outcoached.
Yeah.
They got outplayed by a more senior unit. That guys were ready for the moment, and they just rose a little higher than Duke did. You talked about something that we do during football season called John's List, where we go down the checklist. We're going to do John's List basketball edition, college basketball. So we got three categories.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of them is really debatable. The other two pretty much speak for themselves. Coaching is a category. Players are a category. And momentum. Momentum is a category. The big MO. So coaching. UNC or Kansas. Who you got?
You
got
to give it to Kansas, right? Like, I love the job Hubert's done, but come on. I mean, Bill Self he's already a legend. I mean, what the guy's won about 17 of the last 18 Big 12 titles. This is another trip to the Final Four. Hey, Hubert Davis has a chance to etch his name in history tonight. There is no doubt. Bill Self has a chance to kind of cement more of his legacy with his second title at Kansas. And wouldn't that be something? He would have won the second title at Kansas. They haven't done that since Fog Allen. I don't think Roy Williams never won one there. Larry Brown won one there. But since then, Bill Self won one. So this would be his second. He would be the second guy to win multiple titles at Kansas.
I'm going to raise some eyebrows, and I'm going to go with Hubert Davis.
Oh, come on.
Here's why. I've seen it. What have you done for me lately? Dun, 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 dun.
Okay.
Ooh. Bill Self is a choker to me. I'm sorry. Bill Self and Roy Williams fit in the same glove. I've always seen Roy Williams as a choker.
He won three national titles at North Carolina. I mean, he had his... He had his bugaboos when he was at Kansas, no doubt.
Yes, he did, sir. And when he got better talent, magically, all of a sudden, he became a better coach. These are two of the more even teams I think you're going to see at this height of a game. They both got good upperclassmen leadership. They both have blue chip players, and they both, in my opinion, Hubert Davis has earned the respect for me. Hubert Davis, there's two guys coaching masterclasses right now. I like Hubert Davis.
Okay.
Players, because we got about a minute. Yep. Players, Kansas, UNC, who you taking?
I'm going to say this is a wash right now, and this is going to depend on who becomes the best player in the gym tonight. Is it going to be Caleb Love? Is it going to be McCormick? Who's going to be the best player in the gym is going to depend on who wins that.
I agree. Shockingly enough, I agree. I think this is very even. I think this will be the coaches are going to make more of a decision in this game than anything. 30 seconds. Momentum. Who's got the momentum?
I think Carolina obviously has the momentum. You know, with where they started in this tournament, where they've gotten, who they've beat, how they've beat them. Yes, I would say Carolina has the momentum, whereas Kansas has just kind of played, you know, business as usual type basketball.
The tip is up. We'll see you guys. We'll see. Well, we got more show to do, but if you're watching the game, enjoy it. Let's go, whoever wins. We'll be back. Browner and Lawhead. Browner and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. You can find the show on YouTube. You can find the show, obviously, via the podcast with the Kaplan and Crew Podcast Network, also known as the Great Friends Podcast Network, where we're number one. There's something you need to hear, and there's something that you need to hear before we talk about it. You hear that, Jason?
I can't hear it.
Uh-oh. Technical difficulty.
I didn't know if I was supposed to be able to hear it or not, and I was just going to – I was like, wait, am I supposed to say I can hear it even though I can't? I wasn't sure. But, no, I couldn't hear it.
Okay, hold on. Now, this is part of the technical difficulty. This is Magic Johnson talking on Get Up this morning about the Los Angeles Lakers, and they're – I don't know if you want to call these struggles, but their little situation that they got going. Yes, he still can't hear it, can you?
No.
Okay. So what we're going to do is this. I'm just going to tell you what happened. So it's the magic of the internet. So Magic Johnson was on Get Up this morning, pretty much breaking down to you what happened with the DeMar DeRozan trade. It is now clear that Jason was correct. The Lakers are not going to make the playoffs, and I was wrong. Because I thought that LeBron, who, for whatever reason, said, ow, my ankle hurts now, I'm done, bowed out, and I think this has everything to do with the scoring title than it does to do with the Lakers making a play-in. But Magic Johnson went on television on every ESPN available outlet, whether it be radio and television, to tell people that the Lakers stink, pretty much. And that LeBron James is the reason that they stink. So I'm going to tell y'all something that y'all probably already know. A war is fought on many fronts, okay? When LeBron, at All-Star break, when LeBron was complimenting other general managers, and LeBron was going out here complimenting other teams and saying that, oh, he would play for other teams and how great Cleveland is doing at this point and all these other teams that he's patting on the back, front offices he's patting on the back, saying he had nothing to do with the trade for Westbrook. That's an upper management thing. All that talk. Magic Johnson came with a reality hammer. That's a lie. We all knew it was a lie then. We all know it's a lie now. Because Magic Johnson was on Get Up this morning telling you that he – I don't know why he interjected himself at this manner, but he and DeMar DeRozan's agent basically had everything worked out. He told the Lakers to make the deal. And then LeBron and Russell Westbrook basically vetoed that. And here we are.
And he made some other great points, is that if you go do the deal for DeRozan, you get to keep vital parts that they are really missing. And I've said this from all season long. And You can say, well, LeBron rested the ankle, he didn't play. But guess what? The night he played, he scored 38. He scored 36 in the first three quarters. So with LeBron or without LeBron, this team has stunk in the fourth quarter all year long. I don't care if you've got LeBron, if you've got AD, if you've got Russ, if you've got a combination of all three of them. They have stunk in the fourth quarter and the third quarter many times all year long. Why? Because they can't defend. They can't defend anybody. Yesterday, they played a They played a good game yesterday, and when you looked up at halftime, they were losing by one to a team that wasn't playing very well. Jokic didn't even have a very good first half. He was in foul trouble. He was missing some shots. Denver didn't even look very good. They were turning the ball over. Like, but still, because the Lakers stink at defense, it was 63-62 or something like that.
Yeah,
and the Nuggets should have been down 10 when they were up one. And then, you know, you see LeBron a few nights before that. Yeah, he had 38, but he had two in the fourth quarter. He had three turnovers in the fourth quarter. The Lakers had two shot clock violations in a less than a minute span in the fourth quarter. They've stunk all year in the fourth quarter. And so the fact is Magic is right. If everything is true, what he's saying, which I believe, why would he go on there? I believe DeMar DeRozan would have wanted to come to the Lakers, of course.
DeMar DeRozan has also said multiple times the deal was signed. The deal was already done, and then it got X'd by somebody. He never says who. He says somebody.
Of course. And, you know, there's this pipe dream as LeBron has gotten older. Like, there's this thing like, let's bring in some point guards for me. Why? You're never going to stop bringing the ball up. I love this stat when they're like, when LeBron plays center, he averages – he doesn't play center. He might defend a power forward when a team doesn't have a true center, which a lot of teams don't, and then he still brings the ball up. He's not playing center. He's defending their biggest guy in the first rotation before subs come in. That's it. That's what he's doing. This whole – when he plays center, he doesn't play center.
No,
he doesn't. He might guard their five, which is really a four in a first chunk of minutes of rotation before subs come in and Dwight Howard comes in or whatever happens. Right. But this whole joke of like, well, if we go get a couple of points, Kendrick Nunn, even though he didn't, like, we'll get Russell, then we can take time off of LeBron off the point. That's never going to happen. What they should have did was get DeMar DeRozan, knowing that LeBron is always going to bring the ball up. Mm-hmm. And then you could have kept KCP3. You could have kept Caruso, guys that actually play defense and get involved into offensive schemes and move without the ball and do a lot of things that keep movement flowing and make you harder to defend while you're also a better defensive team. This thing was an absolute, this is like, you know, when the dad helps with homework and he doesn't know what he's doing, and the science experiment just explodes before the kid can turn it in, and he's like, well, yeah, where's your science? Well, we blew it up at home. This is what happened. Whoops.
Look, the second part of what Magic Johnson said was that they were going to trade Caruso. And he's not making any of this up. I just want to be very clear. They were going to trade Caruso. I'm not sorry, not Caruso. They were going to trade Kuzma. For Buddy Hield.
Yeah.
And sign DeMar DeRozan and bring back Alex Caruso. Now, for all the people out there who said, oh, that wouldn't have worked. DeMar DeRozan would have wanted too much money. Then the Lakers would have been hard capped. Do you have any idea how much money Russell Westbrook made this year?
I know.
It would have not been in the ballpark of what DeMar DeRozan got from the Chicago Bulls. And judging by the way DeMar DeRozan tells the conversation and Alex Caruso tells the conversation, they both would have taken discounts. Because Caruso, when the Lakers made an offer to him that they didn't meet what he wanted, what Chicago was offering, he went back to the Lakers and said, okay, well, I'll play for this. Can you guys come down to this?
They ignored him.
And they said, nah, we good. Bye.
Yeah.
So this idea that they couldn't do it with Russell Westbrook's contract because it's in the 40s of millions. If you would have gotten DeRozan in the low 30s, you then could have put that Caruso money on top of there and brought in Buddy Hield's contract, and then you would have been good.
Right.
And I agree with Magic because those are younger legs. DeRozan, not younger legs, but those are younger legs, and those are also, by the way, ding ding ding, healthier guys. They're healthier guys.
And they play better within a team scheme. Taylor Horton Tucker stinks. I mean, that guy stinks. And he doesn't know. It's so hard to watch him in an offensive set. It's so bad.
It's rough.
And you sit there and you go, and now they're benching Austin Reeves. And you're going, well, what is this guy? You know, I mean, they're going to lose 50. They're going to lose 50. They might lose 50.
If the Lakers lose 50 games, here's my theory. The Lakers lose 50 games. They will seriously look at trading Anthony Davis for one of these top three picks. Because Anthony Davis to another market, let's say Orlando, who keeps getting draft picks, that ain't getting them nowhere. Detroit, who would rather have a guy like Anthony Davis than another rookie to add to their mix of rookies that guys who don't know how to win yet. Or if you're the Lakers, this didn't work. We got the bubble championship. Great. But this upstairs, it doesn't work. On the court, it doesn't work. And on the sideline, it doesn't work. So everybody's got to go. And the only way to replenish our system, because we gave all our original picks away to get these guys here, we've got to get rid of two of the three, whether it be LeBron and AD or LeBron and Russ or Russ and AD. I don't think you can get rid of Russell Westbrook's contract. I just don't think you can. I don't think anybody's that gung-ho to do it. And the Lakers would have to pay them to take it, and they're too cheap, so they're not doing that. But AD still has value, and LeBron still has enormous value for many reasons. One, because he's going to become the all-time leading scorer. And if he does that in your uniform, that's worth a lot of money.
But AD, and look, at the end of the day, this guy's, he's due $124 million, I think it is, in the next 3 years.
Yeah.
He's missed over 100 games in the last four seasons. Like, so I get he is a great player, and you saw him give some great effort yesterday, but he was still hobbling around late in the game on that great effort, and he had to come out. He's taking his shoes off when he's on the break. So it's like almost like you're playing Russian roulette trading for this guy because, yeah, he's talented, but you're going to pay $124 million for a guy that might not play 35 games a year or more if it gets worse. So I almost feel like, dare I say, LeBron is the guy to move. You know, I mean, LeBron is the piece to say, look, if we're going to start over somewhere, because LeBron will always have that higher value because he's going to put so many people in the seats. I love Anthony Davis, but Anthony Davis doesn't come with that charm of, ooh, let's get season tickets because we got Anthony Davis now. Like, if you're a Detroit Piston, if you're a Detroit Piston fan, you're not running to the phone to book season tickets if Anthony Davis comes. But if the LeBron James gets traded to you, you're running to the phone to book season tickets. Even if LeBron misses his 21 games that year or whatever it is, you're still running. So I almost feel like if I'm the Lakers, I'm gonna roll the dice to say we get a younger stud in AD. We're going to hope he doesn't miss these games. We've got him for the next 3 years. Let's try to unload LeBron. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I don't think you can unload Russ right now. I don't think without taking a hit and paying out of the butt to do it. So whereas LeBron, you'll get every inch of value. You'll get a lot of picks because teams they'll just be wanting to be, you know how many teams will be in the LeBron sweepstakes compared to a lot of teams like, man, we love AD. But I don't know. That's three long years. The other side of that seesaw,
my friend, is LeBron is a 1 year thing, and he's not gonna want to go to wherever he gets traded. So now you're gonna have to figure something else out. AD, on the other hand, will give you three contracted years wherever you send him. And if I'm giving you a top three pick, I need more back in return than a year LeBron James. But there's so much more to come of that. The Lakers offseason is going to be probably more interesting than their season has been. But a offseason that started off as a snore is kind of picking up speed. I'm talking about the Padres. The Padres make a trade to the Yankees to get Luke Voit, to come DH. They get a guy who, quite frankly, I didn't know much about from the Dodgers as an outfielder, which I think that should be Steve J. Abrams' position anyway. But nevertheless, you get another live bat on the roster, another good guy in the dugout. And now you trade for Sean Manea. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced. The Padres acquired this guy from the Oakland A's. If you are thinking, I've never seen this guy play, I don't know anything about him, imagine having a left-hand version of Joe Musgrove. Because I wrote it down, I had to go and look. Mm-hmm. Imagine having a left-handed Joe Musgrove. Because if you look at all the statistics that this guy compiled for the A's, they're basically Joe Musgrove's numbers last year for the San Diego Padres. So what he is an innings eater. What he is a consistent starter. What he is another guy in this rotation that you can give the ball to who will show up when his numbers call. This is the Padres rotation. As of today, I believe to be so. Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Blake Snell, Mike Clevenger, who will be in and out, Nick Martinez, who they also got in the trade, and obviously the guy who they just traded for, Sean Mannion. At some point, that mix of guys, to me, that might be the best rotation in baseball. Because that's not that they're all flamethrowers or strikeout guys or low ERA guys. Yu Darvish is a number one. Joe Musgrove, Blake Snell, those are guys who you've seen be good. You've seen Musgrove be consistent. You've seen Blake Snell be top shelf, but he gets hurt a lot, and he can only give you six innings when he does play. But the rest of that rotation, and that's I don't know what you're going to get McKenzie Gore, and I'm pretty sure they're going to trade Chris Paddock. So with the numbers, with the names that they have, I like this Padres rotation as one of the best, if not the best, in baseball.
Well, you made a mention earlier, and this is what's going to be the Padres' biggest challenge this year is getting all the innings that they have to get out of these guys. Yes. Can they get it? And I think this trade was probably under the guise of kind of like, hey, I think deep down they feel like Clevenger is not going to be able to offer much.
Because he's already on the injured list, by the way.
He got tattooed in the spring. Obviously, Bob Melvin knows this pitcher. Oakland always scouts really well. Yes. So to get a guy that can eat up innings from Oakland is probably a good thing. You know, it's like you're getting Oakland scouting by proxy in this trade. Bob Melvin knows it. They know how hard they work at going to evaluate guys that can help rosters. And yeah, this is a pitcher version of a guy that can get on base, right? However you get on base, because he can eat up innings, right, and he can get guys out. And maybe Clevenger's arm will be healthy enough to be, you know, a middle relief guy, a spot starter, where they can find him if his arm can kind of gradually come along as the season comes along. But I think that this is kind of a indicator that don't trust Clevenger. I agree. Paddock is not going to be somebody either on the roster or somebody in that rotation. So it is a good rotation on paper. By name, yes. By theory, yes. And it's going to have – but like I said a couple weeks ago, they're going to have to, no matter who their consistent five is, they're going to have to get 1,000 innings out of these guys. I mean, they're going to have to. And can Darvish, can those guys go north of 165 innings this year is going to be the big key. Because I think if Snell and Darvish can go 175 to 200 to 220, that would be a lot of stress off of that bullpen. It'll be a lot of stress off of the back end of that rotation. It's going to give the offense a lot more ability to get out and give their, you know, starters a chance to score some runs.
I think one of the things about this rotation that impresses me, and again, this is going to land with a thud, but you still have Chris Paddock, who can spot start for some of these guys.
Sure.
You still have McKenzie Gore, who can spot start for some of these guys. And you have Ryan Weathers, who gets shelled every time he gets out there. Hopefully, you can work through some of these mechanics, get him back out there. And so now you have three young arms that can spot start and get experience while you're trying to work back in Clevenger, why Blake Snell's going to have to miss a start here and there, why Yu Darvish is going to have to miss a start here and there. Because if we remember correctly, Yu Darvish started playing poorly when they took away the sticky stuff.
Yeah.
When you could no longer use bullfrog and, right, and rosin it was, when you could no longer use that.
Random glove checks. Yeah. His numbers went down, as well as a lot of good pitchers' numbers went down when they did the glove check.
So I don't know if the glove check will still exist this year. If baseball is smart, they'll just, you know, quote unquote, wink, wink, forget about that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, a lot of Padres pitchers suffered because of that, and I think that led to a lot of their injuries because they were throwing the ball far different than they were before the sticky stuff was there. And the adjustment of something of that nature in the middle or right before the middle of the season was very difficult for a lot of these guys, and I think it led to a lot of arm problems that really torpedoed our pitching staff along with some others around the league.
Yeah. Look, Paddock and Weathers, as you said, mentioned, they have a lot to prove. So yes, that could be a good thing, especially with a guy like Melvin at the helm that knows how to, you know, just curate baseball players. He's a lifer, right? This guy just knows how to talk to him, massage him, maybe get him mentally right.
Not something, Deshaun Watson massage.
Something that Tingler wasn't adapted to. And so Paddock, Weathers, big keys, because they got a lot to prove, and will they go out and prove it?
The question is, you know, I don't even, because I think the person of the three, Mackenzie Gore has more questions than anybody. Because we've seen Ryan Weathers get smoked repeatedly. Mm-hmm. We've seen Chris Paddock get smoked repeatedly as mm-hmm. well. But both those, well, Paddock have more ups and downs than Ryan Weathers, who just had one up and pretty much everything else was down. So those two guys, they've got work to do. We don't know anything about Mackenzie Gore. And I mean absolutely nothing. First they said he couldn't throw strikes. Then they told us he was a head case. And now they're telling us nothing. We don't even know if he's going to be available on opening day on the roster. Like, this kid was the number one prospect in this organization for a very long time. Everyone under him that had any type of hype, that be Ryan Weathers, that be Chris Paddock, that be C.J. Abrams, that be Fernando Tatis Jr., they've all played. They've all come up. This guy is the only one we haven't seen and we don't know anything about, and I think he has the most to prove of the three that I could think of.
Yeah. I like Paddock, man. I'm not down. I haven't given up on Paddock yet. I think Paddock kind of goes as the team goes. I think he needs to feed off of the success of the team.
I agree with that.
And I think that if the team can kind of get going and Melvin can build an identity here and get guys feeling like they can take two or three every time they go out, or at least split against good teams in a four-game series, I think Paddock might fall in line. You know, you look at that first season he had a couple of years ago. I mean, his whip was down under a point. He won some ball games. He was able. I think if they can get that Paddock back from 2019, mm-hmm. which I don't think he's there. I think he's got the most to prove, and I got a feeling he's going to come out and help the Padres this year.
He could have a big chip on his shoulder. We don't know. He is a big talker, so we'll find out. You know what we're going to do tomorrow on this show? I'm going to write this down right now. I want you to write this down, too.
Okay.
Tomorrow, we're going to do a baseball preview.
Okay, great. Because I'm off Wednesday. Because tomorrow's my Wednesday. Because I'm going to Augusta, to the Masters, to watch Saturday and Sunday's round. So I'm flying out because I'm road tripping with my dad. I'll tell a little bit more about that tomorrow, but that'll be fun.
All right. Then we'll see y'all tomorrow. Brown and Lawhead. Peace.
Peace.